Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Looking for the perfect First Communion, Confirmation, or RCIA gift? Consider a beautiful, heirloom-quality, made-in-Italy rosary from Ghirelli. A Ghirelli rosary will be prayed with and cherished forever, guaranteed. Shop Ghirelli today. That's ghirelli.com.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
And welcome to our Compass Catholic podcast. This is Manager Money God's Way, hosted by Compass Catholic Ministries, teaching the best practices for handling money. And we use, ready for this, the Bible as our textbook. In the Bible, there are 2,500 verses that speak directly to how God wants us handling money. And we use these biblical principles in our small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. You can learn more and preview the Bible study simply by going to compasscatholic.org. My name is Steve Holbrook, and I'm joined by the co-founders of Compass Catholic, John and Evelyn Bean. Well, today we're going to discuss one of the first steps in turning around your financial issues, namely debt. And it all starts with contentment. Sounds easy, right? Well, it is a major challenge for many of us. So, John, let's start by defining what it means to be a content person.
If you feel content, then you're going to feel satisfied and you'll be happier. Then your question is, well, is contentment the same as happiness?
And I would say no. I would say they're different, aren't they?
Happiness is kind of a temporary high, and contentment is a longer lasting, a deeper feeling of satisfaction and gratitude. And, you know, you feel some possibly even spiritual blessings or you feel a different way towards people and your relationships with them.
So why do you think being content is so good? Do you think that's a natural state for most people? And is there any benefit to being content?
For starters, I think that it promotes a healthy lifestyle. You know, it's a way to combat stress. It's the medics have kind of said that maybe it will even boost your immune system and protect your heart, reduce pain. Maybe even, I guess they really, I don't know how you would prove this, but they're talking about contentment being able to increase your life expectancy.
So if you're really content, you'll live forever, right?
Well, you know, in the Bible, it says if you die before 100, you died before your time. You know? So
I'm not sure that applies anymore. But I can see why contentment is so important, because otherwise, it's really hard to achieve the goals in life that you want to achieve. And by being content, we have the potential to change the people around us because they see us being content. And they can also learn how to be content from our attitudes and our actions.
Yeah, I guess it's a question. Would you really rather be all stressed out and uptight and just really going goofy? Or would you like to be relaxed and peaceful and happy? When we were in the process of trying to figure out if we could retire, if we had enough money, all those kind of things, one of the things that happened was... We didn't know if we had enough money. And so we did a crisis budget. And we figured out what would happen if everything in the world fell apart. you know, in our world fell apart, and how would we live? What would it be like? And we created that budget. And once we did that and we saw that we could get by, then that took away the stress and the anxiety.
About retiring and living.
Yeah. And it gave us a sense of contentment.
This reminds me of an article I was reading in our newspaper over the weekend, and it was about people who had experienced Hurricane Miami in Puerto Rico, and then they moved to the Panhandle area of Florida. And when they got to Florida, they had nothing. This is an older couple. And they, one of the stories they told in this article was about dumpster diving to find a few notebooks and art supplies that they could clean up and give to their oldest granddaughter as a present for Three Kings Day, because they had absolutely no money to spend. The few possessions that they had accumulated disappeared when Hurricane Michael hit the Panhandle area in 2018. So this poor couple endured three major hurricanes in about a portion of 18 months and lost everything they had. And another couple that was in the same situation said that the only thing they were able to
salvage,
that's the word I was looking for. Thank you. The only thing they were able to salvage from Hurricane Michael was his work uniform. But what the article ended with is, despite having nothing, I am happy.
And that's what he said.
That's what he said. How many people would say that? I'm not sure I could.
Yeah.
When you see the big devastating storms and stuff like that, the floods in the Texas and that kind of stuff from the hurricane, a lot of people died. A lot of people died in these hurricanes. To me, the fact that we're still alive, you still have your family intact, that should bring a sense of peace.
And contentment.
Contentment, yeah. Yeah, because all the rest of stuff is just stuff.
Yeah, I got to believe that a majority of people struggle with being content. So how do you make the transformation from I got to have everything to being satisfied with what you have?
I think it has to be a conscious effort. It's not something that you're going to learn easily or that's going to come automatically. It's a concentrated effort to say, what I have is enough or more than enough compared to some other people in the world.
Well, and did you know, Steve, that in the Bible, contentment is mentioned about 7 times? It kind of depends on the translation you're reading. But out of those 7 times, 6 of those times, they're talking about contentment in relationship to money. If that's the case in the Bible, when they didn't have all the stuff that we have to deal with today, what does that mean for us today? To me, I would think that money is probably the biggest obstacle, or money and possessions are the biggest obstacles to contentment.
Contentment is in pretty short supply in our country today and in our culture. I was looking at some websites in order to prepare for today's show, and I ran into the Smarter Image Catalog. Now, what does the name Smarter Image imply?
Expensive stuff.
you're not smart enough, and it's all about image, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's what it's about. That's what that website is all about, being smarter and having a better image. So I found some things in there that are trying to make us discontent that are totally unnecessary. So picture this.
I imagine most of the stuff in there is totally unnecessary.
Well, the things I ran into were really unnecessary. I mean, some of it might be useful, but I think most of it's unnecessary. There was this Major League helmet. And it was a thing that looked like a great big huge giant C. And you put a Major League helmet in between the top of the C and the bottom of the C, and it hovered there without any attachments to anything. Now, isn't that something that you need in order to be content?
You have the phone number?
All right, how about the world's first all-time professional LED lip therapy device to get rid of lip wrinkles? I mean, you know...
So if I order that and the helmet,
you will finally be happy and content.
My lips will look pretty good.
They can't see them through the mustache and the beard, Steve. But none of those things offer any real significant value to our life. But if we fall for all that advertising, we're forced into buying them in order to be happy. And all the ads are telling us we're not good enough. We need a smarter image in order to be happy and be content.
Wait a minute, Evelyn. You said that if we fall for all that stuff, we're forced into buying.
Well, no, we're not forced into
buying.
We're
not forced into anything.
You're right.
We make a conscious decision. And that decision can be either yes Or even better, no.
I don't need my lips regenerated. Yeah. I probably wouldn't be able to talk if I had that. Like a little fish flopping around with no... But that's the problem. All this advertising is trying to make us be discontent, and that leads people to buy things they don't really need that aren't going to satisfy them.
You know, you've got these useless things that you've already mentioned, but sometimes it's even big things that you really don't need, but are easy to justify, like, oh, I have to buy a brand new car because I just have to have these gadgets on the car.
Okay, so tell me this. What type of advice do you give individuals or couples that are going to steer them in the direction of being content?
Anything you buy is not going to make you happy for more than a couple of days. But a lot of people don't want to hear the message. You know, a lot of people are so wrapped up in the materialism of our society that they're oblivious to any other message other than keeping up with the neighbors and the friends.
Do you feel that it's an event in their life that turns them around to think, okay, I really don't need this? And it's that event or crisis that kind of leads them in the direction of contentment?
Yeah, I think it has to be a realization that brings them to a self-awareness that, well, gee whiz, I bought that new phone and I'm not any happier with it than I was with the last phone I had. Or, you know, I got this watch and it tells me time just like the old one did. Or, you know, whatever it is, I've got rid of all my debt. Now I'm not going to get into debt again. I'm not going to pay for that kind of stuff.
You know, John, the smartphone is a great example of contentment. I always find it hard to understand why some of my friends have to have the latest smartphone. The features, yes, they're probably upgraded cameras, but does it really make a difference?
Which features are you really using that much, and why do you need the new phone?
You know, it's all about keeping up with your neighbors to be on a par with them.
To achieve some perceived level of happiness or satisfaction or contentment.
Exactly, exactly.
But it's perceived.
It's perceived, and you know what? Nobody cares if you've got the same stuff as the Joneses. Doesn't make any difference. And most times people don't even know that you got something new. So, you know, if it didn't satisfy you, it surely isn't going to satisfy anybody else. And you're going to be left wanting for the next major electronic gizmo.
If you're not content with what you have, you'll never be content with what you get.
I cannot begin to tell you the feeling that you have when you do practice and master contentment. For me, it was a transformation that took several years. Didn't happen overnight. Purchases that I thought were going to make a difference in our lives never really materialized. We stopped, we thought about it, we prayed about it. And the money that we began to save allowed us to begin building up our retirement account. So start practicing by delaying by 24 to 48 hours any purchases, let's say at a minimum of $100. Wait 24 to 48 hours. Ask yourself. Talk about it with your spouse. Do we really need this? Will it make a difference in our lives? And over time, you'll begin to notice that transformation. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. John and Evelyn Bean are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries. And if you would like to share this program with a friend or family member, go to compasscatholic.org. Click on podcast from the homepage. John, let's talk about our surroundings and the impact that it has on slowing down the practice of contentment.
We are living in a consumer society that operates on assumptions that more is always better and happiness is based on acquiring more stuff. And guess what? Those people who are really wealthy, the ones that make 10 or 20 times what you make, they're not happy either. You know, how much stuff do you have that's new to make you happy? There's not a ceiling on that.
You know, and I think that sometimes when you get into that acquisition life cycle, maybe, or cycle, it's once you start getting stuff, then you want more stuff because every time you get something, you see something else. Whereas if you don't get into that at all, then you're just happy with where you are and what you have. So once you get on that bandwagon, it's hard to jump off.
So Paul in Philippians wrote from his prison cell, and he said this, I have learned to be content. I think learned to be content is important. In whatever my circumstances, I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So Paul had to learn how to be content. It's not an instinct that any of us are born with. We just learn it. Maybe that's not a correct statement if you think about it. When you're a child, you're pretty much content.
As long as somebody's feeding and changing you.
Yes.
Most of the babies are pretty happy.
Yeah, yeah. So they learn to be discontent, uncontent.
Discontent.
Discontented, whatever. Upset with the world. So if we will go to the foundation of contentment, it's about being grateful for what we do have. As Americans, we live in one of the richest countries that ever existed. Even if you are barely making ends meet, you're still among one of the richest people on earth compared to the standard of living of what the rest of the earth looks like.
You know, I think there's also a second part of being content, and that's realizing that the Lord has given us exactly what He knows is best for us at that moment in our lives. He loves us completely, and He knows what's best for us, whether it's a little or a lot. And if we learn to be content with that, we can have a much happier life. So if you're struggling with being content, I recommend that you meditate on the verse John just read from Philippians 4, 11 through 13.
Yeah, pray for the Lord to help you to learn to be content, and ask Him to help you make wise spending decisions.
The secret of being content is knowing what God wants us to do in our lives, with our families, with our jobs, with our financial situation. And then once you have done everything that you can do to make those places in your life happy and content and honoring God, then you can be at peace. Because contentment is an inner peace that accepts what God has chosen for our present vocation and our present financial situation.
You know, back 30 years ago, I wasn't content. I wanted to be rich. And as I've said before, you know, money was my God. I wanted to be just unbelievably rich for generations to come. And so I had a lot of trouble. I didn't know I was not content. I thought I was content to go after, strive to have more and more and more. That was what I was content with. But then I realized that, you know, God wants what's best for me. And He knows, even if I don't, He's going to give me exactly what we needed to go through this one step at a time. What He gave us was a pile of debt. Now, we helped quite a bit, but...
I don't think God gave us a pile of debt. I think God let you go your way. It's called free will, John.
But He turned that circumstance of having all that debt and losing all that money for good in my life. And I just had to learn to trust in God, trust in His judgment. And once I accepted that, then I learned to be content with what I already had and what was happening in my life.
You know, if you ever felt that if you only had more money, then you'd finally be satisfied and happy and content. But like we said before, if you're not content with what you have today, you'll never be content when you get that nicer home or the newer car or more money.
John, you stated that you wanted to be rich. And I just want to mention that it's not a sin wanting to be rich, right?
Not at all.
It's only a sin if the money becomes your God.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And that's where I was.
Well, and, you know, the Bible does not call debt a sin, but it's highly discouraged. And I think the sin there was the out of order priorities.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I agree with that. It was putting the money and the riches and focusing on that instead of on the family and making sure that everything was taken care of. So we're not saying that we shouldn't try to improve ourselves, right?
Absolutely. I think that you still have to strive to be better. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with striving to be better as long as that doesn't become more important than God himself.
So as stewards of God's blessings, we should always seek to improve our circumstances, but improving our circumstances doesn't really mean buying more stuff or getting the newest, latest, greatest tech toys or the smarter image stuff, right?
So we're surrounded every day with all kind of marketing messages, TV, newspaper, radio, pop-up ads on the internet. How do you separate yourself from those messages of wanting more?
Well, you know, I think one of the things is just looking at what you do have, like clothes. I've got more than enough clothes to wear. You know, I mean, I've got stuff I can wear coming out the yin yang. And it's not that I've spent a lot of money on clothes, but I don't need any more. And I think people confuse needs and wants. And when they get into this buying cycle and this discontent cycle, they can justify saying they need things when really they just want things. And discerning the difference between needs and wants goes a long way in learning contentment.
Audrey and I are working with a couple, and the wife has been notorious for going out and purchasing clothes, and she uses as an excuse it's for her job. So what we have asked her to do for the next 30 days is have a moratorium on purchasing clothes and shoes. And when she's at work, see if people notice that she's wearing the same outfit twice in a 30-day period.
But it's so easy to fall into that trap. You're thinking, other people think about you less than you think they think about you.
Oh, exactly.
You know, I mean, I see your wife a lot. I couldn't tell you what she had on at church yesterday.
If you take care of your clothes, you don't need to be buying clothes all the time, you know. I've got shirts that are really pretty old that still look pretty nice. Just because you've got something doesn't mean you got to wear it and throw it away. You take care of it, and then you don't have to go and buy new clothes and do all that kind of stuff.
Well, the other thing is when you do get ready to replace something that you have, whether it's clothes or an appliance or goods in your house or whatever it is, who could use that? I mean, just throwing it in the trash, if somebody could use it, if they could go to St. Vincent de Paul or Catholic Charities or Goodwill or some organization that would really provide it to somebody who could use it. If you're just throwing stuff away, that's not a good thing to do.
I would suspect, this is just a guess, just occurred to me, but I would suspect that we could get rid of 75% of the clothes we have. We would notice a difference and we would feel like we're wearing the same thing all the time, but most other people wouldn't have a clue.
I think I wear the same thing all the time anyhow.
Well, I think I probably do too. That's why the old stuff still looks good.
Steve, he's going out of town this weekend. He's going to come back to a clean closet. Two pairs of pants and three shirts.
But you know, buying things isn't bad, but a never-ending quest for more and more and more stuff can really be dangerous spiritually. You know, 1 Timothy 6:8 says, if we have food and clothing, we shall be content with that. And verse 9 goes on to say, those who want to be rich are falling into the temptation and into a trap, into many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge them into ruin and destruction.
And verse 10 warns us why wanting to get rich is so harmful, because it says, for the love of money is the root of all evils, and some people, in their desire for it, have strayed from the faith and have pierced themselves with many pains.
So the poorest people can be content, and all the money in the world won't make you content. So nothing in this world can fill that God-shaped hole that's in your heart.
So as you learn how to be content, trust that the Lord is going to provide you with exactly how much he knows is best for you at any given time. As St. Paul said, he had to learn to be content. We aren't born with it. So here are some ideas to help you learn to be content.
Develop an attitude of gratitude. Learn what the Lord says about handling money and then practice that. And establish a reasonable standard of living and pray about what the Lord would have for you. Establish a habit of giving. You know, this is huge, and it's probably the main antidote for being discontent.
Being content has nothing to do with how much stuff you have or how new your stuff is. The families we talked about at the beginning of the show are a great testimony as to how you can learn to be content, no matter how much or how little you have.
I think you get the picture. We stress the importance of being content. There are few principles that I feel will point you in the right direction of turning around your financial life, and that's tracking your spending habits, putting together and sticking to a spending plan, a budget, and practicing contentment. John and Evelyn, excellent job. Evelyn, by the way, has written a blog on contentment, and you can read it and find it at compasscatholic.org. All right, let's answer a few emails we received this week. This one is from Mary Lou out in Chuliota. John and Evelyn, I've heard you talk about the money map, and we seem to be on several destinations at once. Is this normal?
Yes, that's very common. You may have purchased a home, which is at destination 5, but maybe you are not using a budget, which is destination 1. And so when you get to the money map, the first thing you have to do is go through and look at each one of the destinations and check off the intermediate blocks in each destination. And then once you've gone through each destination and checked off the ones you've done, go back to the very first destination that has an unchecked block. And that's where you need to start.
And that's good because a lot of people are scattered all over the place. So that's pretty normal. But going back to that first one helps you really concentrate on what's most important to take care of earliest.
All right, John and Evelyn, here is another one. This one is from Gilbert, who is down in Kissimmee. John and Evelyn, my son is 31 years old and has never had a credit card or a car loan. He is now in need of a car loan but cannot get one because he has no credit. What can we do to build up his credit that will enable him to get the car loan or a mortgage down the line?
It's interesting that a 31-year-old doesn't have any credit established, but it's good that he's not asking and you're not offering to co-sign for the loan, because that is a no-no in our world.
Yeah, one way that he could establish some credit is to obtain a secured credit card. And what that means is that he would put $500 or $1,000 in the bank and then use the credit card against that money that he deposited towards the credit card. That's one way that he can establish credit. He can't ever go beyond what he's got money in the bank. It's just like having a checking account. You can't write checks for what you don't have because they're not going to get cashed.
And if he's serious about buying a car, he should start saving the money now that he would be paying on a car payment, so he has a larger down payment when it comes time to actually purchase the car.
I think that's a great idea.
And one last question, John and Evelyn. I have some old debts that are about 6 years old. Given that these debts will come off my credit report in less than a year, should I pay them or just leave it be?
I believe that you should pay those debts. You borrowed the money. You spent that money on something. It's time to take responsibility for your actions. It doesn't matter how old those debts are. Pay them back.
I agree with you, John. They made the commitment to pay to get the debt, and they should pay it back.
Psalm 37:31 says, "The wicked borrow and do not repay. The righteous is gracious and gives."
And if you would like some advice from John and Evelyn on a financial matter that you're struggling with, by all means, send your questions. The email address is ask@compasscatholic.org. And don't forget to check out our website, compasscatholic.org. We have a lot of great financial management tools available for you to use absolutely free. For John and Evelyn Bean, we thank you so much for downloading and listening to our podcast. And remember, we load a brand new podcast each and every Wednesday morning. Simply go to compasscatholic.org, click on podcast. Not only will you find our most current podcast, but you'll find an archive library of all the shows that we've done over the years. This has been Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministries.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.